1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. President Biden is praising the Senate's dismissal of impeachment charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. CBS's Linda Kenyon reports from the White House.
A White House spokesman released a statement that reads, "Once and for all, the Senate has rightly voted down this baseless impeachment that even conservative legal scholars said was unconstitutional." Ian Sams went on to say, "President Biden and Secretary Mayorkas will continue doing their jobs to keep America safe and pursue actual solutions at the border, and congressional Republicans should join them."
But Minority Leader Mitch McConnell blasted his colleagues earlier for killing that trial before arguments.
"No evidence, no procedure. This is a day that's not a proud day in the history of the Senate."
House Speaker Mike Johnson made similar comments today, but kept his focus on a plan to split a foreign aid package into four bills.
"We're very anxious to get the assistance to Israel, our dear friend and close ally over there in the Middle East, in the middle of a war for their very, justify their very existence. They need the assistance now, and we should be providing it to them, and that's our intention to do it as quickly as possible."
Johnson says he'd also rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. President Biden says he could triple steel tariffs on China as the feds investigate the country's shipping practices.
"U.S. Steel has been an iconic American company for more than a century, and it should remain a totally American company."
He says it will protect American manufacturing and jobs. In Arizona, Republicans blocked another effort today to repeal an ancient abortion ban. Here's CBS's Stephen Kaufman.
An effort by Arizona House Democrats to repeal the state's pre-territorial law that forbids abortion except to save the life of the mother failed in a tied 30-30 vote. The future of the Democrats' repeal effort is in doubt.
Homeland Security is partnering now with Meta, Google, and Snap to inform more parents and young users on how to avoid exploitation and abuse. And Tigney Davis is head of safety at Meta.
"This builds on work that we've been doing for years now, aggressively trying to fight these determined criminals. But they're not going away, and the trend is rising for things like financial sextortion. And we will build all the tools that we have in place and try to protect kids from unwanted contact."
Target's now the target of a new class action lawsuit for reportedly collecting and storing customers' face and fingerprint scans. A woman in Illinois is leading that charge, claiming the retail giant didn't get permission to keep all that data.
Keep going.
And 353 little ballerinas just broke a world record in New York City today for most dancers on point at the same time. Many of them are performing this week at the Lincoln Center. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's embattled top elections administrator just won two national awards for keeping elections safe and accurate. Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. This week, she won the American Society for Public Administration's National Public Service Award. Back in March, the Election Verification Network gave Wolf its Public Service Award. About a dozen states are rolling back their child labor laws, and lawmakers in Wisconsin are trying to do the same. Labor leaders are pushing against it.
"It's important for kids to get a good work ethic, but at the same time, these kids need to make sure that they are getting enough sleep, that they are able to participate in their school, and really making sure that that balance is there."
Stephanie Bloomingdale is president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
The Brewers avoid the sweep. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Padres, bottom of the eighth, still no score. Milwaukee's Bryce Terang, the runner at second base. Blake Perkins comes up to bat. Jeff Levering with the call on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Ground ball left side, it's through base hit. Here comes Terang.
Wow, how about
about that. Blake Perkins, they bring the lefty in. That's his strong side, the right side.
The Brewers win 1-0 to avoid a sweep. Bryce Wilson, the starter, held San Diego scoreless, followed by the bullpen.
Our defense is, you know, it starts with Willie and William behind the plate, and you think about Bowers and Hoskins at first, and we got the best second baseman in baseball, and, you know, our third baseman have come through. Dunn had a good game defensively today, and Ortiz is learning the position, and he's spectacular there. And our outfield defense hasn't been great as we thought it would be, but defense is the best friend of the pitching staff. It all kind of works together, and then you give your offense a chance to work.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight and a low in the low 40s. A few showers tomorrow morning, then clearing and breezy for the afternoon, high in the mid-50s. Partly cloudy, windy, and only upper 40s Friday. And around 50 with sunshine and breezy Saturday. Right now it's 48.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, next time on the show, our friend and ongoing contributor, John Roach, author, columnist, and Renaissance man, discusses what's new on the lake and whatever else is on his mind.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy who can still look intimidating in leg warmers, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Nightlight. Let's light this thing. It's Wednesday night in the state of Wisconsin. We're broadcasting live all over our beautiful state tonight from our gorgeous studios in downtown Green Bay here at WGCI. It's a Nightlight Wednesday. Conrad, how are you?
Did you say WGCI?
No, I don't think so. Did I?
You did.
What's the difference, right? Nobody.
You had me confused for a second. That's why I didn't respond right
no,
away.
No, it's WGBW, but... Even people listening go, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, they don't have any, they're not, all they know is this is Nightlight. We're here to have a good time.
Well, if you're watching on the stream, you can see a big sign on the back that says WGBW.
Yeah, it's WGBW. That's where we're broadcasting from here at beautiful City Deck Landing. Got a really fun show for this midweek edition of Nightlight. I'm pretty excited. I saw this film about, I don't know, well, I guess it was last year. Last year at the Wisconsin Film Festival called Hundreds of Beavers. And it was so funny. Actually, I'll go back even farther. About 4 or 5 years ago, I saw a film called The Lake Michigan Monster by these filmmakers or these young guys. I don't know how young they are. Actually, they're younger than me. And it was so out there and fun and just interesting to look at. It's like I've never seen anything like it before. So I watched it, and I'm like, okay, that's great. These guys did this. It's really cool. Well, they've somehow followed it up with a movie called Hundreds of Beavers that is even better. And I would say it's a little less quirky than The Lake Michigan Monster, but it's still incredibly quirky. It's such a fun movie. And the director is here tonight. Mike Cheslick will join us at 7:35 to discuss his... Well, I got a lot of questions for Mike. I don't even know how these guys do that. How they make these films. They're so interesting and so innovative. And it's exciting when you see stuff like this that hasn't been done before. I mean, I'm guessing elements of it have been done before, but to tie it all together and make these two films that these guys have made, it's Mike Cheslick and Rylan Brixen Twos are the filmmakers behind it. They wrote it. Rylan couldn't be here tonight. He's, I think, overseas or something. But Mike will be here. And we'll talk with Mike about his process, about the film, what's happening with it, and where you can see it, because it did drop. You can stream it now. And we'll give you all that information. And I'll let the director tell you himself. That's at 7:35. We have a very unique fundraiser happening here in the Northeast Wisconsin area in the Manitowoc vicinity called Mrs. Roper's Romp. So if you happen to have a moo-moo in your closet, or something that looks like a tablecloth that you typically wear, put it on, and head out to Mrs. Roper's Romp. It's a fundraiser. Megan Brookshen will be joining us to discuss her fundraiser. And it happens Friday night. So it's not too late for you to get in on the Roper fun. If you're a fan of the show Three is Company, and who wasn't? Pretty cutting edge show back in the day in the late 70s. ABC put it out. A show set in Southern California. We've talked about this before on the show. John Ritter played a character named Jack Tripper, who moved in with two women, Chrissy and Janet. And it was forbidden even then. And even in Southern California, and as recently, I know this doesn't sound recent, but 40 years ago, still frowned upon if a man and a woman lived together and weren't married. So Jack had to pretend he was gay. So hijinks ensued. Every episode, there was some sort of misunderstanding, and the Ropers were the landlords, Stanley and Helen. And Helen wore these big muumuus, and Stanley was incompetent in every way, mostly in the bedroom. So that's the genesis of the Mrs. Roper romp that we will learn more about at 8:05 when Megan joins us. And then at 8:35, I'm really excited to have this guest also. We have two directors tonight who call Wisconsin home, or did at one point. Justin Superstar. I think his real last name is Johnson, but he goes by Justin Superstar. And who am I to judge? He made a really cool film that critics like, did really well at the festivals, called Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory. Yes, kind of a funny name, but a very heartfelt film about breast cancer. And I just want to stop there because I'm so excited to talk to this guy and what his family did to help other women suffering from breast cancer. Very exciting to have Justin here. And two directors. It's fun. And Mike will be here at 7:35. Hundreds of Beavers took the film festival world by storm. Conrad, do you know what a festival darling is?
What is that?
That's what they call it. That's what they call a film that's cleaning up at film fest. Okay. It's a festival darling. So that'll be fun. And then there's a lot of other stuff going on. I mean, it's National Cheeseball Day. So I would be remiss if I did not address this great day that we recognize. That is maybe, since we've been doing this show, very possibly the most disgusting name for a day that we've had. I find cheese log, cheese loaf, and the term cheese ball all just vomit worthy. I can do cheese occasionally. I like a nice smoked Gouda in slices. Why you would put it all into a ball or a log or a loaf, I don't understand. And it really grosses me out, which leads us to tonight's question. In honor of National Cheeseball Day, what food totally disgusts you? For me, it's the cheese. It's anything where cheese is crammed together and soft, like a loaf, ball, or log. What about you, Conrad? You got a disgusting food?
You know, I like tuna.
Okay.
But I hate it when it's in the can. Okay. I think it smells disgusting.
Really?
That's the one thing that, like, if I see that in a room, I will go to the other room because it just has the worst smell to me.
What about like salmon though? It kind of has the same texture and look as salmon when salmon is cut up, like at a party if you're there and there's like a.
If it's just in a can, I just hate it.
But it's the smell.
It's the smell in a can, but like I like tuna. When you like fillet it.
Sure.
You know, when you buy it from the store.
Make tuna steaks.
It just can't be from in a can. I just think it's nasty.
All I can picture right now is you torturing yourself and opening cans of tuna and putting your nose in it, like you're sniffing wine before you drink it. Like, just to torture yourself. Okay, so there you go. My disgusting food is cheese in the form of a loaf, log, or ball. Conrad's is canned tuna. What's yours? I'd love to know. Join the show, folks. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Let us know what your disgusting food is. It's also National Banana Day. And I'll tell you, the banana has a soft spot in my heart. It's kind of a fun fruit. It makes you think of tropical things or monkeys. Who doesn't love monkeys? You know, just eating a banana is kind of. I always used to want to have a banana party. Like people come over and instead of holding drinks, everybody's just kind of holding a banana. I think that would be kind of cool.
If someone doesn't know about that and walks in.
Oh, see, that would be the best. Then you record it and you're like, what the hell is going on? Well, we're serving bananas. You got a problem with that? It's good, clean, wholesome fun. Don't sniff the tuna and don't go to a cheese log loaf or ball that we would also be serving because someone would definitely want one. All right, here's another thing. It's Victoria Beckham's birthday today. She turns 50. She was one of the Spice Girls. And here's a song that I heard in my sleep in the 90s. Let's just hear a little bit of this, Conrad. All right, you can lower it. Were they just trying to make a word quota or something? Like they couldn't. This song got in my head for like a month in the 90s. Whenever it was out, I don't remember exactly, but I could not get this song out of my head. And now I'm sharing that with you, the listener, and Conrad, daring you to try not to think about this song. It's maddening. It's like, I mean, it's an okay song. It's catchy, but this is not one you want to try to fall asleep at night and not be able to get this out of your head. All right, you can kill it now.
Are you sure? You don't want to listen to more?
Well, that's awfully tempting, but no.
I think we should make that just the outro music for every single segment.
Yeah, you'd probably get slapped with a lawsuit. So that song for me, that's one of them. The other one is Set the Night to Music by Roberta Flack. Now, I love Roberta Flack. Killing Me Softly with his song. Beautiful song. She's got a beautiful voice. But Set the Night to Music is just such a canned. It's like that song. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Okay, then tell me what you want, what you really, really. It's just like trying to kill time. It's just silly. They sure were cute, though, the Spice Girls. They brought a lot to the pop world. Were you Spice Girls? That was before you were born, right, Conrad?
Yeah, that was, well, it was
close.
That song came out, what year did that song come out?
I have to look it up. And I know your mom carried you way past 9 months, so maybe technically it could be, didn't she have like a 14-month pregnancy with?
I don't know where you got
that's
that
a
information
great character
from
for a movie. Like a Wes Anderson. Yeah, his mom carried him for 19 months before she came. Oh, my gosh. Paula, I meant that generically. I feel like I know your mom now, and I don't want to give her that thought like, oh, dear God, no. Whatever. What mom would ever want to? Paula is one of our first texters tonight. She says she's in the 920, but not really in the 920. She says sauerkraut. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Kind of compliment it with. Got a few more texts here. We'll read next. But fun show tonight. Hundreds of Beavers director Mike Cheslick is here. I'm going to try to not fill your heads with the Spice Girls as the show proceeds. And we're going to talk Game of Thrones drop today. It's a big anniversary. And we have a trial scene, right?
Yes.
All right, we're going to play that. We're going to talk to Mike Cheslick in a little bit. And I'm going to read your text next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Great to have you with me. A teardrop starts, and it breaks my heart. For when a teardrop falls, I want to cry, cry, cry alone. When you're feeling blue, I'm waiting just for you. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, home for the Devil's Advocates.
It's a polka party, and for good reason. 30 years ago, legislation making the polka our state dance became official in Pulaski.
I think everybody in Pulaski showed up in Zielinski Hall or on the streets because it was a polka day celebration.
That's then-Governor Tommy Thompson who signed the legislation in April 1994. But do you know who got the barrel rolling on the idea in the first place? The Wisconsin Polka Boosters, a class of second graders, or the State Folk Museum? The answer coming up.
It's tradition, it's culture, it's food, it's beer, you know, heritage.
Heritage back to the 1840s when the polka became popular with Europeans and came to America with them. So who started the Make Polka Our State Dance movement? A class of Madison second graders, but the Boosters and Folk Museum supported those efforts. It's a cultural slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
If you would like to watch us on the stream, go to Nightlight with Peachwaba's Facebook page or go to Civic Media's YouTube channel. Now let's get back to Nightlight with Peachwaba.
What is your most disgusting food? What food totally disgusts you? That's the question of the night in honor of National Cheeseball Day. 855-752-4842-855-75-CIVIC. You know, this could be like, you know how you call someone a cheeseball? Maybe that's what they meant. I don't know. But I'm taking it like it's the food. And I get grossed out. I'm particular about cheese. If it's in log, loaf, or ball form, I can't do it. And Robert checking in. He says he's here to have a good time. Hey, Robert. I hope we can give that to you. Now the pressure's on. Robert says beets. He can't do beets. He's in the 608, and he says, the only time my mom made us stay at the table till we finished everything on our plate. My brother and I gagged so bad, my dad left the table, and let my mom be the bad guy that night. Wow. I got to tell you, I'm with you, Robert. I used to feel that way about beets. I'm okay with beets now, and they're really good for you. They're like a superfood. But on their own, like you can mix them into a salad or something and it's good. On their own, I don't know, maybe a little blue cheese on there. It's a nice way to eat a beet. Conrad's mom says sauerkraut from the 608. Ross from Crawford County says lost in Soldier's Grove. I can't do head cheese. Oh God, another one. The thought and the consistency, yuck. Yes. Okay, so let's add that. I can't do cheese in head, loaf, log, or ball form. That's a great one, Ross. Yeah, that's pretty disgusting. And then Andrew from Verona checking in. Green bean casserole, disgusting. Green beans should not come from a can. I agree with you there, and I'll tell you another thing that makes it disgusting, Andrew, and I'll probably get a lot of pushback on this. When people put mushroom soup, creamy mushroom soup in with green beans, that's a big, like, Thanksgiving, Christmas dinner dish. That's what ruins it for me. I can actually do green beans out of the can, but not if you add the mushroom soup. No chance. So, great text. Way to start things off. That's the Nightlight besties checking in. Love it. This is also Rooney Mara's birthday today. She was the girl with the dragon tattoo, the American version, which a lot of people say pales in comparison to the overseas version. With Noomi Rapace, I liked the American version as well. Maybe pound for pound, it's not as good as the foreign version with, I'm getting it mixed up. Daniel Craig, I think, was in the American one. But anyway, really solid films. So Game of Thrones dropped today. And do we want to do Game of Thrones, Conrad?
We could. Or is there something else you wanted to do?
Yeah, the AI beauty contest has got me a little rankled, too. Here's what I don't like about this. Have you read about this, the AI beauty?
No.
It's a celebration of AI computer generators. They're like considered artists, and they make these contestants. So it's like you're having a beauty pageant for fake people. They're not people.
That's very interesting.
Why are we doing this? It's like we've become a society that just likes to draw naked girls. That's fine when you're in, you know. When you're 32, wait a minute. No, I was younger. But come on. That's and the judges are AI generated as well. So what is happening? And the disgusting thing was, like, I saw this on Yahoo and all these guys, some, not all, but there was a few comments like, this is what women should look like. Really? An AI generated one? That's your standard? Move out of your parents' basement. That's not fair to anybody. An AI beauty contest. Crazy. I wonder if they'll do it for men. Seriously.
I don't. Do we want them to?
I don't even think we need this. I mean,
you don't really need it.
You don't need it. And if you can't find beauty in a regular human woman, you seriously need help. Honestly, yes. This is just really strange. But, you know, the people that create these, they consider themselves artists. And I'm sure there is an art to it. But the beauty contest thing is weird, I think. Yeah, I don't know. So, and then I saw this too, Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel. You probably don't remember him, Conrad. He's a very good broadcaster, very arrogant guy. And, you know, he was a really just a fluid, sort of smooth host of the Today Show. And he did the NFL show, one of the pregame shows years ago. He is a great broadcaster. She came out, she did Bill Maher's podcast recently and said that he gave her a hard time for taking maternity leave. This is in the early 90s. And Bill Maher said, yeah, well, he's a guy's guy. I can't stand that. Like, Conrad, when you hear the phrase guy's guy, what do you think of?
I've heard like a real guy's guy. I don't even know. Like, tough?
Well, I mean, it could be. I think it's a guy who other guys really like and like to be around.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're an insensitive jerk.
Yeah.
And he would give her a hard time because he would see her doing things when she was on maternity leave. Like, she's supposed to be home just breastfeeding or something all day. So, and Bill Maher, I like him at times, but he's kind of in a bubble. He does not live in reality. I remember when he was a stand-up, he seemed still seemed pretty normal. But when I watch his show, he's just, when your frame of reference is just a rich, single, metrosexual guy, they can do whatever you want. You're not really living in reality. Am I getting political, Conrad? I don't mean to get political. I'm just saying, no, I like the guy. I'm just saying, I think he's not really living in reality. He's living in AI. Let's see the AI version of Bill Maher. That's what we should do. We should have AIs designed for ourselves. Give myself a 6-pack.
There you go.
That might be pushing it. Give myself a 4.5-pack. It's something passable, you know. So, all right. So we got Mike Cheslick coming up. That'll be fun. He is the director of Hundreds of Beavers. He's going to be along in just a few minutes. Our question tonight is, what food absolutely disgusts you? And this is in honor of National Cheeseball Day, because I don't like cheese ball. I don't like cheese balls. I don't like cheese in the head, loaf, log, or ball form. What it... Conrad just doesn't want me to go to sleep anymore. Put the stupid song in my head. Okay, that'll do. That's nice when your producer is being adversarial. Conrad's least favorite food is tuna from the can, which I can understand that. I don't mind tuna from the can.
It's just the smell.
It's just the smell.
It just gets me.
I respect that. Robert from McFarland checks in again. The North never forgets. Oh, boy. We kind of teased some Game of Thrones, and we never. We'll play the trial later, Robert. Stick with us, buddy. Robert also says no one ever accused Bill Maher of being a good person. Yeah, there are some rumors about whatever. I don't know any of them. I don't repeat stuff. I don't know, but he is a bad guy. No, I'm kidding. I don't know that. I know there's a lot of accusations. No, I don't know that. I wouldn't say that. I really know nothing about the guy, Robert. But I'll take your word for it. Jim from Appleton says, any fresh vegetables that are boiled to death and become mush, gaged all the way through trying to eat them, gagged all the way through trying to eat them. Love you. Great one, Jim. All right, we're coming back next with Mike Cheslick, the director of Hundreds of Beavers. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. I see all my dreams come tumbling down.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
CBS News Brief. The two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas delivered to the Senate yesterday by House Republicans have been dismissed. House Speaker Mike Johnson.
The idea that the Senate and under Chuck Schumer's leadership voted on party lines to not even allow the American people to evaluate the evidence is shameful.
The first article charged Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with immigration law. The second charged him with a breach of trust for saying the U.S.-Mexico border was secure. Hawaii's attorney general has released a report on last August's deadly wildfires on Maui. It raises new questions about a power struggle between officials and details a communication breakdown that left residents without emergency alerts. Boeing whistleblower Sam Salapour tells a Senate subcommittee about dangerous manufacturing practices at the airplane maker and threats against employees.
My boss said, I would have killed someone who said what you said in a meeting.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Four people with disabilities are suing for easier voting in Wisconsin. The group wants the Wisconsin Elections Commission to let them vote electronically. Wisconsin doesn't allow it, but 13 other states do. Electronic absentee voting for Wisconsin residents is only for military or overseas voters. Governor Evers says people dealing with PFAS in their water for years are tired of politics. Evers scolded Republicans yesterday for not coming to a special meeting of the Joint Finance Committee to approve $125 million for PFAS cleanup.
More people are going to suffer in the state of Wisconsin, and that is... that's a huge mistake on their part. Huge mistake.
Republicans say Evers should have signed the PFAS bill they sent him this spring instead of vetoing it. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
You're at the game with your girl and you're going to pop the question. So you take a big swig of overpriced liquid courage. You pull the ring out of your pocket, get down on one knee, and then she says,
oh. I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. SNL cast member Heidi Gardner laughed so hard and broke character so blatantly during an SNL sketch that she says it caused her anxiety. The skit from last weekend involved Gardner as a talk show host with a studio audience behind her as she interviewed Kenan Thompson, who played an AI expert. During the interview, Ryan Gosling sat behind her dressed as Beavis from Beavis and Butthead. Kenan Thompson pointed this out to the host, and they had him move, only to replace him with Mikey Day, who played Butthead, and looked hilarious. When Thompson's character called attention to Butthead, Gardner turned to tell him to move as well and saw him for the first time and lost it. She literally could not contain herself the rest of the skit. Gardner said it was Day's exposed gums and teeth that made her lose control. Vulture.com says the show had kicked the idea around for 5 years before actually using it, which is crazy. It's one of the funniest things I've seen on Saturday Night Live in years. I recommend Googling immediately. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight and a low in the low 40s. A few showers tomorrow morning, then clearing and breezy for the afternoon, high in the mid-50s. Partly cloudy, windy, and only upper 40s Friday. And around 50 with sunshine and breezy Saturday. Right now it's 48.
The morning show on WFHR, it's delicious.
Peanut butter and jelly should be squidgy.
Oh, I know a lot of people, yeah.
On good squidgy white bread.
Yeah.
It's the way it's got to be.
My sister felt the same way. It's got to be, the middle especially for her, had to be just a mush.
You guys, as fascinating as this conversation is, one very big thing you just missed there. Melissa just said the word squidgy on the air.
Yeah, she did.
I mean, what the what?
Weekdays from 8 to 10 on WFHR.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If it seems you are being asked to donate pretty often these days, Lisa Schiller with the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau says you probably are, and she's hearing from residents about it.
They're getting aggressive calls, they're getting mailers in the mail asking for donations, and they want to know where their money is going.
Schiller says ask questions and understand the difference between a political action committee 527.
Pat Kreidlow.
Thursday on Up North News Radio, a legislator from Oshkosh is featured in our Women Win Wisconsin Spotlight, powered by Motherhood for Good.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabba anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. Great to have you with me on this Wednesday night. We are broadcasting statewide all over the beautiful state of Wisconsin from downtown Green Bay. This is where all the action is. Conrad, you know that, right? I mean, you moved here.
Yep, yep.
I don't live here, but there's a lot of action here. Action tends to follow me wherever I go. It's all in Green Bay. Coming up at 8:05, we're going to talk about Mrs. Roper's Romp, a fundraiser. And then Justin Superstar joins me at 8:35 to talk about his film, Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory, a very heartfelt movie about breast cancer and how people are helping others with breast cancer. Right now, I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. He is a very, I guess the term is up-and-coming director, and he made a film that took the indie film world and the festival world by storm called Hundreds of Beavers, and he joins us now on Nightlight. His name is Mike Cheslick. Hey, Mike.
Pete Schwabba, thank you for having me. Thank you for tolerating this.
Tolerating this? What are you talking about?
I barely got this system up. I only use technology from the 1920s.
That's okay.
I only make silent films, and anything beyond that is very difficult.
Mike, I still have a Friendster account, so I am not going to try to match wits with you from a techno standpoint. Either way, it is great to have you here, though, and congrats on the movie.
Thanks. Seems like some people like it. I don't know. We'll see if that continues. The backlash could come soon. It's still small enough that people are supporting it because they feel like a hipster for knowing about it.
Yeah.
But once you hear about something three times, you really get sick of it. And it might just, they might all turn against us, Pete.
I think you're doing okay. I think I saw Lake Michigan Monster at the Wisconsin Film Festival maybe four years ago. No. You're way too humble. And I know you know you did something good there because it's a great film. How do you, Mike, how do you do that? I just have to ask. I know there's got to be green screen. Maybe you don't want to divulge some secrets. I understand that too. How do you make these films? They're so innovative.
What you got to do is you cover them in black and white, grainy black and white to hide your no budget. You know, you just shoot on your, Lake Michigan Monster was directed by Ryland, actually. I was doing the post on that.
Oh,
and then
really?
We came together for the third act. Yeah. So Ryland and I are really filmmaking partners for these two films. And the Beaver one I directed, the Lake Michigan Monster one, I was, I wouldn't say I helped, but I didn't shut it down, and we kind of established a look on that first film that has been taken to greater heights in Beavers, perhaps. I'll be bold enough to say.
Okay, I have to ask you, was the whole project, I'm talking about Beavers, just to reintroduce the drink Applejack to the world?
There's only like Laird's and like one other, like people don't know.
Man.
About it. Did you know about like high proof apple cider called Applejack that was freeze distilled?
I did, but I had to Google it to kind of refresh my memory. I mean, you know, it's like sassafras or, like some of these other old timey things that people drink, mint juleps.
Yeah. It's not even that much of a northern thing. I think it was a little closer to the East Coast, but we made it in Wisconsin because of all the orchards. And I'm sure there was cider here too, but Applejack specifically is like, I don't know. It's kind of Pennsylvania, but I don't know. My dad had told me about it at some point. And Laird's is not a sponsor, but tries to emulate the old process, I guess, where you just freeze distill cider over and over until it's high proof.
It's so great. And it's so, I'm a transplant, Mike. I know you come from Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've lived in couple places, lived in LA for about 15 years. What I love about Wisconsin is how quirky it is. And I think the whole state is just, back when I was doing stand-up, I loved working with guys from Wisconsin, and I have lifelong friends. Did the Wisconsin quirky humor, it's obviously worked its way into your films. I don't know if that's because you're from here, but has the state influenced your outlook or your POV?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone in Wisconsin's funny. Like everybody, going to any bar in Wisconsin, the majority of the room is pretty funny. And that's not true everywhere. I mean, people in the South are funny. They have a sense of humor. a lot of different regions in the East Coast have a sense of humor. I like LA, but they're not funny here. That's why the comedy scene is so big in LA, is because it's just a market vacuum. There's a market demand for funniness in LA. LA is, you know, it's not the hellhole it's described as, but it is not funny. And Wisconsin people are very nice and very funny.
I totally agree with you. Where do you live in LA, Mike? What area?
I'm in Pasadena now, so I'm huge sellout, and I'm only pretending to be from Wisconsin to reap the rewards. The entire film is Wisconsin. The whole cast and crew and the money came from Wisconsin, and it was 11 weeks shot in Wisconsin. So it's a Wisconsin movie. I live in LA now trying to get the editing career going.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah, I see you've got some I'm not ready to leave Beavers yet, Mike. Where did this idea come from? Where did you guys, you wrote it together, right? You and Ryland?
Yeah, we wrote it together. Okay. That took a few months. After Lake Michigan Monster, we knew the next thing, you know, had to involve, you write around, based around available resources. We had my After Effects proficiency, and we had no money, and we had snow, and a lot of friends comfortable falling down in snow, and then we had Ryland's physicality. So the entire movie was based on those elements. And we've always thought the mascot thing was funny. And then just a childhood of video games, silent movies, and cartoons. You don't even need to do research. That stuff's just baked in. And Beavers just combines everything that we've liked for a long time, especially, you know, stuff that I've been thinking about for a long time, like the fact that the Mario camera and the Buster Keaton camera are one and the same. And I sort of wanted to make a film to prove that little cinematic thesis. And I don't know, does that answer the question? I forget what the hell you asked, Pete.
It's not important, Mike. Do you, that was one of my questions, or your influences. And I'm glad you said Buster Keaton, because I remember thinking Buster Keaton and Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam. And Ryland plays, you know, he's kind of this big buff guy, but he's so deprecating in a way, and I don't know if it's through his acting or through the script or what, but he's so good at physical comedy. How much does that elevate the project for you as a director?
Yeah, we're writing with that in mind, and we're thinking about how can he communicate these beats, these ideas with his pose.
Yeah.
You know, how can you have a tight series of poses? This is how you'd approach it in animation. I'm not being funny. I'm just saying the truth. Is that okay?
Listen, buddy, I'm here. I'm getting an education. So please talk it well.
The truth is that you're communicating a series of ideas and emotions with the whole character's silhouette and their body. So Ryland's hitting these poses a little more like a puppet, and he's got a little more of an athletic attitude. He's not, you know, in the mind of the character. He's not thinking about it as a method actor. He's not feeling the emotions of the character. The only emotion he's feeling is cold, which was easy for him to put his head in that space, because it was cold.
Yeah, he, you guys, how, when you're writing this, Mike, the script has very little dialogue. Was it a long process, the writing? To me, the writing process, and I come from a writing background, is the hardest process. You got to have a good script to shoot. That's the most important element, in my opinion. However,
yeah, and it's not fast. It's not fast.
Right.
It'd be nice if it was fast. A lot of companies want it to be fast, but it's not. You know, we had our little Joseph Campbell structure of a fur trapper who gets kicked out of Eden with his Applejack distillery, and then he has to survive in the wilderness in the first act, and then he has to become the greatest fur trapper ever. And then, you know, the Beavers, maybe they get their revenge. I don't want to spoil the third act, but once you have that basic structure written out with the mentor figure and the love interest and the merchant, then you hang all these gag ideas on top of that. And that's just a million note cards. And we're not like, people are like, you know, think that people who like the script, I would just say to them that it was very slow. And if you find any aspect of it interesting or impressive, you wouldn't have been impressed if you saw how long it took.
Wow. Yeah. Is it harder to make a shot list, Mike, when you don't have a lot of dialogue?
I think visually, and so all these gags were a little note card doodles, and they were hung on this kind of basic three act structure. and it's like a joke a day. So you write for 8 hours, and write means sit around and drink and watch Kung Fu. And then you have like one joke, like one egg pops out at the end of the 8 hours. And then, but if you do that for a couple months or maybe years, you know, eventually there's a lot of jokes in a movie. So we tried to keep our joke pace at like, you know, every a joke every 35 seconds, unlike this broadcast. I'm sorry to say. I'm just saying the truth. We're not being funny.
No, wouldn't it
be better if we were being funny, Pete?
This is an in-depth. I'm trying to be Bob Costas here, buddy. I'm just trying to get you to maybe even cry if I can get you to go back to your childhood. So, I love to, like what you just said, was this written in the script? My favorite moment in the whole movie was when Ryland, I think he's trying, if I remember correctly, it's been a year since I've seen it, but a beaver kind of gives him sort of this furtive look, and Ryland just looks at the beaver and goes, like he's actually thinking about it. Was that written in the script, or did he improv a lot of stuff? Or did you guys both improv a lot of stuff?
I don't even recall the scene. I have to be so very honest. Funny. I'll answer the improv question. Nothing was improvised. It was totally board driven. I used to like improv, and then I just don't believe in that anymore. I just think it's wrong morally. And now we just stick to the boards, and we think the future is precise, physical, board driven comedy with no coverage. Everything's in one angle. Like even for a broadcast like this, I don't believe in the fact that there's two cameras covering each of us. And the audience's eyes are moving back and forth. There should be one guy with a camera on a tripod guessing who's talking and swinging the camera back and forth. I just think there should be no coverage. It should just be one image at a time. That's my philosophy until I break it in like a week.
Listen, I think Conrad, take a memo. Let's try the one camera thing.
Sounds good.
I think the problem is people are watching the radio. So I don't know how much traction that's going to get. I think if people are watching the radio, they're not fussy. But I do like the way you think, Mike. My guest is Mike Cheslick. He's the director of Hundreds of Beavers, a festival darling that has made. Hey, what was your favorite festival you guys were at?
You know what's an underrated festival is Phoenix. That was a lot of fun.
How so?
They just brought in an audience.
Yeah.
You want an audience. Sometimes I want to show the movie to an audience of people that don't make movies. And Phoenix is a nice mid-sized festival that is just at the Harkins. It's actually it's not a chain, but it looks a little more like a multiplex, but it's an independent theater group in Phoenix. And they just do a nice job bringing in like filling seats with like local people that don't make movies. Which, I don't know, there's a lot of great festivals. That one just sprung to mind as kind of an underrated festival.
Yeah, you guys won a ton of awards. I want to say a friend of mine told me that you guys have won more awards than any indie film or something like that. Toot your own horn here, Mike. Help me out.
We're benefiting from this thing where, you know, this genre is a great American tradition, slapstick comedy,
yeah.
And it just hasn't been done for a few decades. So it would be like if no one made a horror film for like 30 years, and then two idiots made one horror film that was like fine. Everyone would be like, oh yeah, I forgot you could do this. And they'd get they'd benefit from a little bit of an overrating from just that genre having disappeared for no reason.
Why did it disappear, do you think?
Because we're in a service-based economy now. It used to be a more working-class economy where people were working with their bodies. And so the comedy was based on doing something wrong with your body. Now comedy is based on saying the alligator pit is like an HR meeting. It's like the comedy is about saying something wrong now, but it used to be about screwing up with a ladder, doing something wrong with your body.
Knocking an old woman over.
In China, they still like physical comedy. There's so much, you know, there's just like, they're making everything.
Yeah. God, I get so many questions for you, Mike. Okay, I'm talking with Mike Cheslick. He's the director of Hundreds of Beavers. We got him for a few more minutes here. He's a very busy guy. I do appreciate you taking time out, Mike. When we come back, I want to ask you about, I want to ask you where you go next. And if you're trying to be different with these films, like if you naturally just found this thing you think is cool, or if you, because I think all writers do that. They go, I got to write something different, something unique. So I want to try to figure out how you got there. And that's coming up next with Mike Cheslick on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous, unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Beavers are everywhere. There's hundreds of them. I'm talking to Hundreds of Beavers director Mike Cheslick, who joins me here on Nightlight to talk about his film that sort of caught the indie world by surprise. Mike, the film just, where can we see the film? I know it just dropped, right?
Yes, the film is available for digital rent and digital download. It's also playing at a number of theaters across the country. If you can see it in a theater, check hundredsofbeavers.com to see if it's playing near you. If it's not, send us the name of your local indie theater and we'll try and book it there so that you could experience this movie with a big audience of laughing people. That's the most fun way. If not, have a group of people at your over at your house and give it a digital rent or download from Amazon or Apple.
Nice. Yeah, it's well worth it. It's a very funny film. And it is one, I think, if people have people over or see it in a theater, that's the best experience, obviously, with most comedies. But that's good advice. So you worked on a show on your IMDb page. I saw this, The Get Down. I really liked it. What happened with that show?
Oh, yeah. I just got hired to do I was a lead animator on an animated segment of that show that was kind of done in the Archer pipeline. So you're animating. So I was just animating a few shots with this is just one of many random gigs I've had on the side while making the indie movies from out of Wisconsin. But that was the Archer pipeline done in After Effects with puppets, you know, digital puppets. And that software is the same software I did every Beavers shot in. So over the years, I've gained proficiency in After Effects through just a bunch of random jobs, like a lot of Fox Sports, a lot of Fox, and I did Wall Street Journal for a while. I've just had a number of just like broadcasting jobs, just like, you know, a map of the South China Sea with like arrows pointing around where the where the next military move is going to be. Like that kind of work just gets you fast at After Effects. And then Beavers was written around, you know, having 1500 special effects shots on top of the 11 weeks of shooting in the North Woods snow. I think we just tried to make a movie that only we were qualified to do, which is all that After Effects work done mostly by me and also a little by my friend Jerry Couric from Milwaukee, and combining that with our buddy's tolerance for snow.
So how that was one of my questions, too. You have an editing background. The post-production on this film must have taken forever, I'm guessing. Was it you obviously like to do it, but was it really tedious?
Yeah, it was tedious, but each shot is rewarding. It's like a pleasure to put a cool image together. And I don't think there's any relationship between the amount of money a movie has and the strength of an image. Shapes are free. You know, it's fun to try and make a strong an image that communicates a joke without having necessarily a ton of money. We just shot on a little camera called the Panasonic GH5, not a big cinema camera.
That's so great. Okay, so you guys have been writing together, I think, since high school or college. I kind of asked you this before the break, like, do you guys have the same sensibility or are you trying to write something different and unique? I mean, everybody is, but you guys seem to really be on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, we have the sense of humor of the buddies we've known over our lives. And that's just, you know, I think everybody that kind of pops in the comedy world is bringing not only their sense of humor, but the sense of humor of their buddies from their hometown. And so Rylan and I, you know, have a group of friends that are funnier than us. Some of them who played Beavers who all have a, I would say maybe a distinctly Wisconsin sense of humor. I don't know. I haven't demonstrated it here, but you'll just have to believe me. I'm more joke engineer guy working on the computer. But yeah, we just have a group of funny friends. And did we try and make our sensibility distinct from the marketplace? Good question, Pete. I would say we leaned into what was unique about ourselves, but pretty much if you just avoid all new TV and all new movies, then you're going to have a sensibility based on older stuff. And people are going to say, what a unique sensibility. And you're going to say, no, I'm homogenous compared to all the Abbott and Costello I watch.
I'm just surrounding myself with all my knucklehead Wisconsin friends, and we're making ourselves laugh.
Yeah, and then, like, so the people I'm around and the content I consume, like, I'm not unique from that, but I guess if, you know, I've totally isolated myself in a cabin with those things, then, yeah, it might seem unique if you're from New York.
So, all right, so you got this movie. It's been crushing it at festivals. You probably got a little buzz behind you, I would assume, opening a few doors. How do you...
Yeah, I'm buzzed.
How do you pick your next project? And do you let, at what point do you say your reps or producers, execs, representatives, whatever, influence you to the point where, like, the next film you make, will it be you and Rylan, and you're not going to, like, take writing jobs? Or are you going to let, are you going to cash in? Because I know a lot of people do. If you can get a good writing gig, or do you want to keep making those films like you guys are making?
Well, hopefully the writing gig can be like punch ups, like a few hours a week, and then gives you a little stability, and then you can hopefully still own your projects outside of that. I'm snooping around town about that right now. How can we make things that are still distinct and unique and exciting, and that, like, you know, continue in this direction we're going, but have a little more stability? Because the indie feature route is risky, and I don't plan to live there until I'm 60, but. Yeah, so it's tough. That's what I'm chewing on right now, is how do we maintain this sensibility and not have somebody screw up our physical comedy jokes, as you see happen in every Super Bowl commercial.
Right.
You know, retain control over the physical comedy precision while supporting families.
Mike, let me throw this at you. I hope you cash in and sell out. And I also hope you keep making your independent films to keep your soul over here and your pocketbook over here. You could do both, and I hope you do, because you're just an incredibly talented guy, dude.
Thank you so much. That's great advice. I'll take it. I'll take the advice. I'll do that.
Look,
I'm in the market for advice right now, and I actually am just doing, well, you've settled the matter.
I like to give unsolicited advice. I'm surprised more people don't ask me for advice, Mike. That's why I have to shell it out ad nauseum. But
I was about to.
Feel free. Hey, we got about a minute left. What are you watching on TV? What does Mike Cheslick sit down to watch? What entertains you?
I have a 2-year-old daughter, so I just watch Kiki's Delivery Service over and over again. Have you ever seen Kiki's Delivery Service?
That was not around when my kids were young. That's so great, though.
It's from Japan. She's a good role model, Kiki. We just watch it over and over and over again. So I just have kids' movies on loop. It's good if you're an animator and you're studying animation to just watch the same well-animated film 4 million times. I try to subscribe to Netflix. I get angry when I turn on Netflix. I just start yelling at everyone in my home, and then I just cancel it and I put silent movies back on.
Mike, I appreciate your time. I cannot wait to see what you guys do next. And please come back and see us anytime here. It's been great.
Thank you, Pete. God bless.
You got it. You too, buddy. That's Mike Cheslick, the director of Hundreds of Beavers. Fun chat. We're going to talk The Ropers coming up. I know the one thing the show has been lacking is more Three is Company talk, and it's coming up next. There's a fundraiser involving a lot of Mrs. Ropers, and then we're going to talk some more film at 8:35. Big night here at Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Next time on the show, our friend and ongoing contributor, John Roach, author, columnist, and Renaissance man, discusses what's new on the lake and whatever else is on his mind.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.